This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. 10 minutes of five on a Friday means it's time to review the week in NC politics. Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch is here, as is Mitch Kokai from the conservative John Locke Foundation. Hey, fellas.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff.
Dwayne Hall, a Democrat in the State House serving part of Wake County, remains in office. Hall has not resigned, as many in his party have called on him to do. He's fighting back against two reports that were published in Policy Watch last week. Those articles detail alleged sexual harassment and misconduct. Hall says the pieces amount to a personal vendetta following a relationship Hall had with the executive director of the parent organization of Policy Watch. Rob, that's your boss. What role, if any, did that relationship play in these pieces?
Zero. Absolutely none. In fact, this story had been being developed by our veteran reporter, Billy Ball, who's worked for a multiple number of newspapers down through the years. Billy has worked for us for quite a while. He started working on this story months and months ago, became aware later, very much later, that at one point there had been a relationship between the daughter of the executive director of the Justice Center and this Representative Hall. And, you know, it had nothing to do with the reporting on the story. Indeed, when he brought the story to me a couple of weeks ago, I didn't even know that Representative Hall was a subject of the investigation. So nothing at all whatsoever to do with that relationship.
The names, I wasn't trying to be coy. Megan Glazier is the daughter of Rick Glazier. He was a Democrat in the North Carolina House from Cumberland County, Fayetteville. Oddly enough, coincidentally enough, was a colleague of Dwayne Hall's in the House. I'm sure you've heard many reactions and dissections, all sorts of things over the last week or so. Should you have disclosed the relationship between?
Well, I'm very sad that this has become more, that to the extent this has become the story at all, rather than the alleged behavior. Obviously, I'm very sorry about that. It was a very difficult question. It would have required us to disclose a private relationship that I'm not even sure we had the authority to disclose. We thought about, okay, should we kill the story and not report this very important development that the public has the right to know? Should we try to somehow give the story to somebody else? But I think that would have, that wouldn't have absolved us of responsibility for the story. So it was a very difficult situation to be in. We thought about trying to disclose it. After, of course, it was disclosed by Representative Hall, we immediately published a detailed explanation of the chronology of what had gone down, how we had made the decision, in an effort to fully debunk any notion that there was any motivation there other than to just get the truth. And I think the good thing that's happened since then and that I've gotten in reaction is that there has been a recognition in lots of circles that this is a huge problem in the General Assembly. We had this very encouraging call this week from the North Carolina General Assembly Democratic Women calling for reform in how these complaints can be heard, because there is no way for them to be heard right now in a legitimate way at the General Assembly. So the good thing that's happening here, and which would ultimately be, of course, our objective as an organization that cares about policy, is that the policy looks as if it's poised to get much better, because it couldn't be much worse right now.
Mitch, a reaction or two on where things are with this piece, this issue?
Yeah, there are two separate things. One is the behavior of Dwayne Hall and what, if anything, should be done about that. That's separate from the piece. And I don't know what is the proper course to happen with Dwayne Hall. Obviously, a number of Democrats say this is reprehensible. You need to step down. He has decided he's not going to step down and, in fact, has denied many of the allegations, which seems a little odd because much of what's been reported seems to have been witnessed by several different people. It's not just
seven in our stories.
It's not just a case of he said, she said, something that happened behind closed doors. I would suspect that there may have been other people who saw the incidents that have been described. But the good thing is that we have elections. Elections matter. And even though this is a very Democratic district that Dwayne Hall is in, it's not a case in which people in that district have to say, do we suck up and vote for a Republican who we really don't like just because we don't like Dwayne Hall? No, this is before the primary, so they could vote for another candidate if they'd like. Obviously, other Democrats would like to see Dwayne Hall step down now, take himself out of this picture. So there's the story of Dwayne Hall. There's also the story of the coverage. And one of the things that when I first heard about the relationship between Dwayne Hall and Ms. Glazier was that I thought that Policy Watch could have inoculated itself against the eventual attack that Dwayne Hall launched had they put in a line somewhere near the bottom of the story saying, in full disclosure, Dwayne Hall at one point had a relationship with a staffer who is also the daughter of our executive director, left it there.
We wrestled with whether that would inoculate us. I'm not sure it would have. I think he would have probably lobbed these attacks.
He probably still would have launched the attack, but it would not. For those who were amenable to supporting his side of the case, would not have said, "Oh, they're trying to hide this relationship. What's their real motivation?" The other piece of this that I think raised some questions was the timing of it. I mean, this piece, as Rob said, they've been working on it for quite a while. It ended up coming out just after the filing period ended, and I think people who were willing to look for conspiracy theories were thinking, well, why'd they do this? Why didn't this come out before filing started or while there was a chance for other candidates to come forward? Why did it come out when it did? I don't know that there's any reason for why it was put out when it was.
I can tell you why.
But, you know, that's one of the questions that was raised that I think Dwayne Hall is trying to use to his advantage now.
I think he's grasping at straws. I can tell you why it came out then. It was because that one was ready to go. I must confess to you, I'm not sure I even knew that was the filing. We were so immersed in the story at that point and so trying to get it right and double-check our facts and all of our sources. I don't think I even knew what day it was at that point. There was absolutely... And even, I'm not even sure, you tell me that it came out after the filing deadline, I guess maybe the filing deadline
same
was
day,
that
I
same day.
I
honestly didn't even know that until somebody wrecked. So I can assure you 110% that had absolutely nothing to do with it.
A new poll on arming teachers emerged this week. The Elon University survey, in conjunction with McClatchy newspapers, found that 78% of teachers think that arming classroom educators is a bad idea. There was also more discussion this week about additional funding for school resource officers. Among the dialogue, Congressman Mark Meadows rolled out a $1.5 billion plan to add funding to SROs. Is the narrative about firearms shifting away from possible gun reforms, such as minimum age, background checks, removing bump stocks, to school security?
I don't know that the narrative is moving away. The whole idea of school security is a key issue. You could pursue both angles. If you think there needs to be more control on guns or bump stocks or some element of the firearms debate, that is an avenue worth pursuing. But certainly, wherever you fall down on the issue of gun control, the idea of school security should be something that's front and center. It is something that the State House has now appointed 40-plus members of its 120 members to look into.
Let me interject real quickly. Two people that are not on that committee are Marsha Mori and Joe John, both of who are Democrats, but also who are the only two judges in the legislature, have a lot of experience. Somebody pointed this out to me this week. Should they be on that committee?
I'm not sure if they asked or wanted to be on the committee, and if they have not tried to be on the committee, I'm not sure if there was a particular reason why they wouldn't be. Another person who's notably not on that committee is Representative Larry Pittman, the Republican from Cabarrus County, who has been the most vocal advocate for allowing...
I can tell you why he's not on that committee.
For allowing teachers to have concealed carry if they have the permission from their principal and have principals concealed carry. So that in and of itself may be a signal of where the State House is going to be looking, and I don't think they're going to be looking at arming school teachers.
Yeah, I agree with that. Moray and John would both be fine additions. I don't know that they have I don't know whether they have an interest or whether they have a particular specialty that would make them excellent additions. They're both strong legislators. Yeah, it seems to me that the issue of guns in our society and in the United States, I still hearken back to that old Onion headline, "Only country in the world where this happens," says they can't figure out a reason or how to stop it. There's no way to stop it. Of course, we know how to stop mass shootings. We need to stop putting mass killing machines in the hands, especially of children. But I do have some concerns about the notion of, in effect, militarizing our school zones. I mean, the school resource officers, I have a wife who benefited from when she was a school teacher, of using a school resource officer. It helped her in some circumstances. They can be very beneficial. But we know for a fact also that school resource officers in some instances have contributed to sort of the criminalization of school behavior. The fact that we have more and more children being fed into the school to prison pipeline and behavior that 10 or 20 or 30 years ago would have been dealt with in the school itself has increasingly been drawn into the criminal justice system, especially here in North Carolina, where we've until recently or really still are treating 16-year-olds as adults or 17 and 18-year-olds as adults. So bottom line, they need to be judicious about how they go about bringing school resource officers into the equation. But it would be hugely beneficial to have a serious discussion about limiting access to firearms, especially the dangerous assault weapons that are such mass killing machines.
Republican House Speaker Tim Moore is facing allegations of ethical violations. This week, a D.C.-based group asked state officials to investigate Moore's business interests at the site of an old poultry plant. The complaint, in part, alleges that Moore was trying to delay environmental penalties against this site. Moore calls this a meritless election year political ploy. Mitch, what do you call it?
It may be an election year political ploy. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's meritless. Tim Moore is drawing attention to the group that is lodging the complaint, which would be the tactic that anyone would use if they want to divert attention from the actual complaint, is make the ad hominem attack on who's making the complaint. I think the problem for those who are trying to move forward with this complaint against Tim Moore is they're basically saying that because certain things with the regulatory process for this property that he used turned out the way they did, there is some sort of evidence there that Speaker Moore did something improper. I don't know any evidence one way or the other. It's possible that they'll find some evidence that he did. It also could be possible that some of the things that happened with this property where fines were put off or delayed or more time was added is the same thing that happens to any other group that fails to meet the deadlines. Yeah, I mean, it could be that his property had the exact same thing happen to it that anyone else's did. So it could be hard for anyone to prove that there's more than just something that doesn't seem to pass the smell test. The one thing I will say is that this does draw attention to the fact that politicians like Speaker Moore and others are often involved in deals, whether it's real estate or a company they work for or own, that just seem to not gel well with their official position, and that we could hope that there would be some sort of move in the future that a lot of these business dealings either have to be put on hold or just set aside if you're going to be serving in a public position, so you don't even set up the possibility that people are going to look at it and say, oh, he or she is getting a great deal just because he's a top official.
Yeah, I would agree pretty much everything Mitch said. It seems to me a serious allegation. The Campaign for Accountability, the group, I think it probably is progressive leaning. It's my impression they've also gone after progressives as well in the past. So I don't know. It certainly seems like something that needs to be investigated. It raises real issues, and it does raise issues about the very notion of public figures being involved in complex financial deals and that involve regulators who they themselves have some oversight over. And it's enough certainly to, I think we need to take a look at it.
Mitch Kokai is senior political analyst at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekend, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.